Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks, guys. I'm your host, Brett King. I am joined today by the lovely Chloe James. Chloe, welcome back.
Brett, great to be here as always.
And my good friend, I should say the lovely Jim Maroos.
Brett. Hey, good to be here, Brett.
Yeah, we got a good show for you today, big show, huge show for you today. We're going to be talking about how to stay relevant in disruptive times and, how you can prepare yourself for the future, make yourself future-proof. We're also going to be talking a little bit about some of the stuff that's coming up over the next few weeks in respect to conferences and things like that. Maybe, Chloe, do you want to jump in and we'll start with that?
Yeah, totally. Really looking forward to the show today. I love this future-proof, and we've got, I think disrupt is the big word. We've got Jim on and obviously Jay coming up shortly. So first off, conference announcements, just going to go through a few of those. Finovate Europe, I've mentioned this one a couple of times, coming up 12th to 14th of Feb in London. So just a couple of weeks away, actually. Next week, showcasing cutting-edge fintech. Gosh, I can't believe that. Cutting-edge fintech demos, real-world applications, lots of business leaders there, hundreds of financial institutions. Some of the big names you know will be on stage. Brett King, Jim Maroos, JP Nichols will all be there. And they're going to be doing a live Breaking Banks. So check that out. I'm gutted I can't be involved. I said to Brett, I'm actually elsewhere in the States next week, but it's going to be a fabulous event. So do get involved in that. You still can save 20% on admission with the code BANKS20. Now, there's something else exciting happening next week that Brett, Jim and JP are doing a live meetup, a Rise London exclusive meetup. There are 10 places left, so I know that's really pressing. So get onto that ASAP. You can register on Eventbrite. So look it up. So it's on Thursday, the 14th of February.
Yeah, we can put it on the social media channel.
Yeah,
as well.
Awesome. So 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. So Valentine's Day evening. What a way to spend it with Brett, Jim and JP. I mean, lucky people whoever are going to that on Valentine's Day night. Brett's going to be there signing his book. There'll be lots of other sort of attributes there. Jim, what can people expect from that evening that you guys are hosting?
Well, you know, we're looking forward. Number one, it's always good to get together with a lot of the people, the fintech community in London. I was lucky enough to be there in December and meet up with a lot of them. And we're going to have, you know, I've already talked to a lot of people that I met in the wintertime in December. And there's going to be a lot of people there. We're going to do just a little bit of, as you said, the book signing from Brett. There'll also be discussions about what's going on, what we should expect from 2019. Very informal. Drinks and fun, pretty much.
Fun. And you're going to chat Brexit a little bit, I hear, which should be interesting.
Yeah, we'll get into it. We got Liz Lumley joining us as well. She's going to help us. She's going to MC the evening for us. So we got a local to do some translation.
Awesome. So we'll pop that in the show in the notes, but and we'll all be talking about that on social media. But get along. As I said, 10 places left. It should be a great one. Okay, a couple of other announcements before we kick into the show. April 9th and 10th is the S&P Global 8th Annual Community Bankers Conference in Dallas. Yeehaw. So there will be lots going on there. Provoke are a supporter of that, so get involved in that one. We are the podcast partner for Seamless Middle East, coming up April 10th and 11th in Dubai. Seamless is that huge summit that I speak about quite a lot on the show. Really, really large scale exhibition. Thousands of attendants, retail payments, fintechs, identity. Seamless.expo.com/ME for Middle East. So check that one out. Something else, this is a good one, and Jim can probably talk to this a little bit, but for those looking for something close to the US, the Financial Brand Forum runs April 15th to 17th in Las Vegas. So actually, Jim, do you want to talk a little bit quickly about the Financial Brand Forum, what to expect from that one?
Yeah, it is the biggest event in the world around financial marketing, and Gary Vaynerchuk is going to be there. Barbara Corcoran from Shark Tank is going to be there. We have people from Google. We have myself. I'll be actually introducing a brand new report along with Salesforce on financial marketing and what are the trends in financial marketing right now. But the event has just grown enormously. It's quite exciting to see that it's grown from about 400 people 5 years ago, and they're expecting 2,500 this year. And actually, they're running at a pace that they'll be selling out ahead of time as well, just like our meetup is going to be. So, you know, get those tickets now. You can look up on the Financial Brand Forum or theforum.com.
Fantastic. Okay, well, great announcements there. Thank you for that, Jim. Brett, probably back to you.
Let me jump into the news. So, you know, the big news today is, of course, we had Bink on the show. It's a payment link loyalty startup, you know, a few months ago now, but Barclays just announced a big investment into to Bink. It's makes them sort of a strategic partner in respect to that. So that's you know, pretty big news for our friends at Bink, Mike Jordan and the guys over there. So congrats to that. The Australian Royal Commission on Banking came out this week, of course, and there's been some chaos as a result of that. NAB, both the chairman and CEO resigned yep. today. Did you see that?
Yeah, they both resigned, and it's just going crazy all over the press there. Also, to note, the chief of staff is in hot water over spending. So, yeah, it's all going down there.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other some of the other news, we have the Swiss Stock Exchange that's planning to raise capital in their new digital asset system. Chime has been recently valued at $1.5 billion, or they're doing a raise at that run. And Tink out of Sweden has got €56 million in funding this week there. So some fintech continues to see the funding continues to flow from venture capital and private equity. So it doesn't seem like the market's going to cool down anytime soon in respect to fintech investment.
Absolutely. I think we'll chat a bit more on that on the show. On that Australian Banking Royal Commission, if I can just give a little plug,
sure.
Brett, RFI has just actually released a response to it, a trust technology and transformation report, which I'd be happy to share with listeners, where we've basically, you know, speaking to a whole bunch of people, 50,000 consumers over 12 months, to really talk about how people are feeling about what's going on in the market there and how banks can respond now, given the sort of damning case that's against them, and then how they can acquire customers and leverage new open banking environments. So just a little plug, Ben, because you mentioned the RC.
Hey, Jim, with the your recent world tour and the work you were doing on the road, you themed this tour the Disrupt Yourself Tour. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so this came out of a lot of research that we've been doing recently at the Digital Banking Report around the attitudes and feelings of financial institution executives globally. And what we have found is that overall, there's no lack of knowledge of what needs to be done in the banking industry. I think most financial executives have a pretty good idea of what the competitive situation is, what the consumers are wanting, and what is expectations among the industry. The challenge is actually doing something about it or being prepared to do it. And so what we did is we went back and looked over studies that had to do with personalization, with AI, with financial marketing, with the overall marketing trends and even banking trends. And we found that most institutions are committed to the key elements of improving the financial customer experience, improving the use of data for analytics, with analytics to drive action and to drive personalization. There's a pretty good understanding of what needs to be done in P2P payments, as well as in the cloud and blockchain. The challenge is that almost every one of the executives we survey, number one, they're not putting the money behind what they know they have to do. And number two, on a personal and professional level, they're not ready. They self-admit the fact that they're not prepared, that their career path is not such that has them understanding, being able to take action on what needs to be done. And so talent is a very big element. So what we did is we came up with some facts and figures around the fact that in order to succeed right now, financial institution executives, as well as financial institutions themselves, need to do three things. And the three things were, they need to embrace change. And that sounds like a common sense item, but when you're really looking at a history of doing banking the way it's been done, and when you've pretty much had a pretty steady path, change is not an easy thing to accept. And we all talk about wanting to change. Heck, we make our New Year's resolutions. We talk about wanting to change the way we do things. But sticking to those things and actually changing is out of our comfort zone. It's out of our human comfort zone because it's going into a risky area. And the second thing we tell institutions and banking executives they need to do is they need to take risks. And I don't mean major risks, because that's certainly not in the realm of what most banks like doing. But what you really need to do, and I use the analogy of a roulette wheel, is that what you want to do is put investments down on various different winning combinations that may take place, so that while you may not win as big, you're not going to risk at all. And again, it's looking at this and saying, you know, the biggest risk that financial institution and financial institution executives have has been their success. Because really, when you look at the fact that financial institutions right now are not going broke, they're having some of the most profitable years. But the challenge is to take the risk of saying we're going to do things differently to be prepared for the future. And the third element is actually disrupting yourself, and disrupting yourself on both a professional and a corporate level. And what that really means is realizing that you've got to strike a new path.
It is very clear absolutely
that the skill sets of the bankers in the past are not going to be the skill sets needed in the future. And actually, it doesn't matter if you're in banking or any other industry. Changes never happen this fast as right now, and will actually never happen this slowly again. So the handwriting on the wall is, you know, if you're a traditional lending officer, you've got to look and say, how do I disrupt myself to really embrace the change that needs to take place to become a digital lending officer? How do I look at what's going on around me and figure out where do I have to be tomorrow? Because the industry's going to get there faster than we're going to be prepared to do.
Fantastic. Well, that's a good intro, Jim. And so what we've done is we've brought in today Jay Samet. Jay is a best-selling author. He has advised people all around the world, including presidents in the past. He's a trend spotter, futurist. His column on exponential technologies is published by Fortune magazine. He frequently appears on ABC, Bloomberg, CBS, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, NBC, and his book that was out last year, I believe it was last year, it might actually be the year before, is entitled Disrupt You. So Jay is sort of the one of the world's leading experts on how to cope with disruption that's aimed at you personally, how not only you survive it, but how you can disrupt yourself. So Jay, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. And it's interesting when you hear each specific industry today talking about the financial industry feeling like they're alone in facing the amount of disruption facing our changing times. And as your previous speaker said, it is happening faster than Darwinian rates. Boardrooms aren't prepared for it. Management structure isn't prepared for it. And what you're going to see, and if you look at some of the leaders right now, you're going to see new institutions eclipse traditional lenders and traditional financial institutions. It came as no shock to me, but to much of the world, when China does $5 trillion in mobile payments, you know, where was MasterCard? Where was Visa? Where were banks? The next step is lending and credit, and you're going to see that same eclipse happen very, very quickly.
Yeah, we're seeing some of the numbers coming out of China from last year, Jay, and we think they're going to do that. Last year's numbers were closer to $22 trillion, which means that China's mobile payments market last year surpassed the entire global plastic card payments market. Pretty impressive stuff.
Right. And there's nothing unique about Chinese culture or Chinese lifestyle that says that this will be just happening in China. And that's the challenge. And when I work with the large financial institutions, and I had tons of people working on blockchain for bank-to-bank cross-border settlements and all of these types of things. The one overriding thing that surprised me is for most financial institution, their customer is their profit center. And that's what you're going to see change in this new era.
Jay, I had a look at your TED Talk just earlier today, actually, which I absolutely loved. I thought it was fabulous. And you,
Thank you.
You spoke about, it was so great, but you spoke about something really interesting and resonated with me, which are the three lies you keep telling yourself to keep you enslaved in a life you don't want. And I just wanted to touch on a really interesting one about, not having the resources to be successful. And if we're looking at this future-proof your life episode, what do you think we need to future-proof our lives? And let's just, I guess, think about listeners of this show and perhaps in a corporate perspective. So people listening to Breaking Banks, what's it going to take to future-proof it?
So the first thing people have to realize is many of the competitive advantages that used to exist have been leveled. So being in a major city is no longer a competitive advantage for access to capital or access to sophisticated banking. The world has become flat in that sense, not in the moronic sense. The second is the only insight a corporation has in the 21st century, the only advantage that you can have is to gain insights from your data faster than your competition. So if you're not leveraging that, then you have no advantage being a global player. Anybody has access to the same data that you are. And what's interesting, when you look at financial institutions, they are data-driven to the nth degree on looking backwards, but they do very little of extrapolating of where they should be. And that's their blind spot. And that's why you see mobile payments. People have been talking about mobile payments. It's not like mobile phones just came out last year. People have been talking about it for 20 years, and yet who was leading this from the financial institution side?
Yeah, there's a great quote from on a Bloomberg article in 2007 around the iPhone, which said, "Oh yeah, it's going to it might please a few fanboys, but it's not going to affect the financial industry at all." And it's like that sort of blinders of the potential impact of mobile. But all the fastest growing financial institutions in the world today are really focused on that ability to scale through technology, and that's the big differentiator. So Jay, when we talk about technology disruption and that speed of change, how do you coach, first of all, individuals to prepare for that, and secondly, businesses?
Sure. The individual is easy. So the reason why I wrote Disrupt You or Disrupt Yourself, depending which country you're in, how it's translated, is everybody thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing themselves. So if you can take off your blinders and change one fundamental truth that voice in your head has been telling you since you were a young kid, you missed 3 times 4 in the second grade, so you think you're not good at math, or you peed your pants at show and tell in the second grade, so you don't think you're a public speaker, whatever's holding you back. Once you realize that you're malleable, then everything else in the world becomes malleable. For institutions and for companies, it's really about breaking down what are your strategic assets, what separates you. And the greatest example is Apple Computer. Apple was a failed computer company. Let me say that again. It was a failed computer company, never made it past 10% market share. So Steve Jobs looked at what did they have, and they broke it down, and they said, let's try consumer electronics with the iPod. Well, that went well. Let's try going after mobile, and do a phone. You'll see them go into cars. You'll see them go into tennis shoes. You'll see them go lots of places because they're disrupting themselves. If you think that what you've always done is going to always work, that's where it falls apart. That's why the majority of the Fortune 500 companies have disappeared. Of the original list, only 57 are left. Let that sink in. These are the biggest of the biggest. Right? So for an individual, it's about lifelong learning. It's about staying relevant. It's about seeing how new technologies can be applied. So I'm obsessed with augmented reality. It will replace us looking at our phones. We'll have heads-up display. But that's tied to all the other converging exponential technologies. So you put in 5G and cloud computing, and now you have the ability of the world to conspire to bring you information. So from a financial perspective, your glasses will be whispering in your ear, don't make that payment, you'll be overdrawn.
Yeah, you can't afford to pay the rent next Tuesday if you buy that.
Right, but so as opposed to the bank, which could tell you and doesn't, so they can make a profit off of you, you'll now have a partner that helps you guide and manage your financial future. Will that be a financial institution or will that be somebody else? What happens when Amazon or Alibaba launch their own currency? Does it become more stable against inflation than a nation's currency? Mm. I mean, these are really big, big changes.
So in thinking sort of about that, you travel obviously a lot. You were doing a book signing. Wait, you were last week, you were doing a book signing somewhere with a new
Brazil.
Translation.
Yeah,
Brazil,
just came out in Portuguese.
Congratulations.
They had Disruptivo. That's it for my Portuguese, by the way.
No, that's fine. So you obviously travel the globe. Do you think there are certain cultures or certain types of economies that are better at absorbing disruption?
Fantastic. And I was down in Australia in December, and I got an education in the tall poppy syndrome, which is holding back startups there. It blew my mind. For those that aren't familiar, nobody likes to boast and brag in Australia.
As well as the fact they only have two asset classes, property and stocks. And so, you know, people don't invest enough in, private equity and VC.
Yeah. So
maybe that's why we left, Brett, because we're both Australians living overseas, but I can't say either of us suffer from tall poppy syndrome.
No, we managed to rise above it. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what is the cultural difference, because I've worked with the Russian government, I worked in India, South America, you name it. And one thing stood out from a U.S. perspective is, you know, U.S. doesn't have exclusive access to capital. We are not in the top 10 educational system anymore. And yet, why do you see the vast majority of unicorn companies starting in the U.S.? Culturally, the U.S. has one last advantage. We have no fear of failure. Mm. If you watch The Simpsons, Homer has a get-rich-quick scheme, it falls apart, and life goes on. In too many places, if somebody backed an entrepreneur and the business failed, they would be shamed. They'd never, you know, show their head again. Where if you go in Silicon Valley, VC firms would rather back somebody whose first venture failed because they've learned. And so understanding the difference between failing and failure is the key to this. Failing is how we learn to be successful. Failure is throwing in the towel and giving up. Mm. So those cultures that are still tied to some aspect of shame for trying, when the biggest mistake you can make is being afraid to make one. And financial institutions are by definition conservative. Everybody that runs a financial institution is a lemming. They want to be the first to go second, which is why when you see these new innovations, they never come from traditional financial institutions. And I've been a public NASDAQ CEO. You're on a hamster wheel for quarterly earnings. You're not investing in something that will pay off a year or two down the road, which is the role of the startups. And the startups really fill that void. And that's what's been exciting in fintech, as you guys have been championing for years.
Jay, the startup scene and the fintech scene is a really exciting one. But for traditional players out there, what is your advice when it comes to this taking risks and taking chances? And this is in an age where, you know, we were just talking about the Royal Commission in Australia, and risks are so scary because everybody feels so exposed and vulnerable. What's your advice about taking risks?
I just keynoted a conference of all the credit unions, you know, a unique sector that, you know.
Huge sector in Australia.
Huge sector, but each is so individual, none can do it. So there's a couple ways. One, depending on nations' anti-competitive laws, you can set up a fund that's backed by all of the players in a thing to feed and invest in an ecosystem for startups that benefit that position. So the cable industry did that. The telco industry's done that. I haven't seen that happen from the financial industry. So that's one approach. The second is to set up an internal system. So we all know what an entrepreneur is. There's also intrapreneurs, and I've been this for three large multinationals in my career, where basically you're not on the quarterly system. You report to the CEO or the board, and you try to, you know, rock the boat and come up with a new business model.
From the financial institution basis, which organizations do you see are best positioned right now that you're familiar with for that seem to be most embracing of change and disruption, that they seem to be rolling with the punches better than the most?
So,
yeah, is there a sort of an organizational characteristic or fingerprint? Yeah.
I don't know about organizational, but in full disclosure, they are client. So it's I'm allowed to say it, and I actually believe it. Visa is a great example. If you put Visa in a petri dish, you'd see something completely different. They were an association just like MasterCard, you know, just lollygagging along in a great position. When someone made the decision in there to really start brainstorming the future and become a patent house, they have been living in the future. They have huge teams. They have built a patent portfolio that has increased their value tens of billions of dollars because they're committed to saying, how do we stay relevant in the future? And they have an organization that has embraced it. They give awards internally. They give awards for who makes the most patents and et cetera, et cetera. So the culture is a Silicon Valley-esque culture while the mothership is still profitable. Too many companies wait until it's too late and go, I guess we got to try something new.
Hey, Jay, one question on that is, you know, you've seen what's happening in China. We were talking about it at the top of your interview when we started. Obviously, the big news out of Singles Day this year with Alibaba was the fact that most of the transactions or purchases made during Singles Day were done using facial recognition. And so it appears like the Chinese ecosystem that's emerging is emerging on top of this really frictionless system. You don't need a point of sale terminal. You don't need plastic. You just need your phone. Now you don't need a signature or even a PIN. You can just pay with your face.
I'll take it one step further. Not only does our biometrics allow everybody to do their own banking, but it also allows each person to become an ATM. I'm on the board of a company called Abra that allows people.
Yeah, we've had Bill on a few times.
Well, they've just announced that you can now do gold trading, future stocks, ETFs, all from a wallet that's borderless, that's not tied to any currency other than what you want to invest in. I mean, it is completely shattering how our financial systems work. And as you start seeing these systems provide credit to the 2 billion unbanked, this is an economic revolution that can change, countries that have a high poverty level.
Absolutely. All right. Well, listen, guys, hey, we're going to just take a quick break and we'll come back with Jay and have a little bit more from him. And then later in the show, we have Rocky Scopoletti joining us all the way from Sydney, Australia. So stay with us. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We're just going to have a few words from our sponsors.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
The Voice America Live Events Channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed, by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Jim Roos from Breaking Banks, and today we have a pretty full house. We have Chloe James in Toronto, Ontario right now. We have Brett King from in New York, and we have Jay Samet, the author of the book Disrupt You, talking about personal transformation, seizing opportunities, and thrive in an era of endless innovation. So, Jay, before we went to the break, we were asking different things about different industries, and you mentioned that Visa, you thought Visa is really one of the most foremost organizations as far as being able to really move with the punches, for lack of a better term. And when I looked at some of the elements with regard to disruption, it's just as important to disrupt the people element themselves, not just from a professional basis, but even on a personal level in a family. So what suggestions would you give our listeners with regard to really being able to disrupt themselves? Where should they start?
Absolutely. Great question. Well, given the fact that over this decade, we'll see half of all jobs globally disappear due to automation and AI, I think people should pay attention or be the cannon fodder that's left over. So to help people starting today, I have a free 40-page workbook for all the listeners. Just go to jaysamet.com, jaysamit.com, and it has a bunch of exercises of how you can start thinking differently and acting upon those changes. And, you know, that's why I wrote Disrupt You, to try to help as many people as I can.
Can you give us a little teaser, Jay? What's one or two things that we can do starting right now?
So right now, the best exercise that can give everybody here the same change and the same deal flow as a top VC is write down today three problems in your life and do that for 30 days. The first day is super easy. I was in traffic, this or that. But after day two or day three, you really run out of problems. So you start having to analyze your life moment by moment to identify those things, either at work or at home, that you say, that's the way it always is, that's the way I always do it, and realize that there is spaces for change. And that's where things like Airbnb and Uber come out of, recognizing those problems.
I love it. Okay, well, we'll all be able to do that. I love that. I do three grateful things every night. So I've been doing that for years. So I'm going to add to my three grateful things. I'll add three things that are annoying me today.
You, Brent, and everybody do it, and we'll get together and look at your top three out of the 90 a month from now, and awesome. You'll be amazed at what billion-dollar ideas you've come up with.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh, okay, I want a billion-dollar idea.
Yeah,
I'm on it.
Yeah. Now, Jay, you refer to some of the most innovative people in the world in your book, Richard Branson, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk. One of the things that seems to help Elon stand out from the rest of the world is his voracious appetite for knowledge and the fact that he can learn very quickly. You know, that's one of the things behind SpaceX that constantly is a reference, the fact that he learned rocket science basically, to that top level of NASA rocket scientists in a relatively short period of time. So how important is the ability to continue to learn in this?
I'm 58. If you came in to me and I was your doctor and I told you I hadn't learned anything or read a new journal since I got out of med school 30 years ago, you'd fly out of my office without an airplane, okay? So the same for your career.
Unless you're using an AI.
Yeah. what's fascinating to me is all of mankind's knowledge is a couple clicks away. You know, it's no longer that you have to go and apprentice under somebody or go to a 4-year, 6-year, 8 years to get a PhD. That knowledge is there. It's free. It's accessible. So why wouldn't you make yourself an expert in an area that you're passionate about and change your life and hopefully change the world?
was interesting, Jay. This is Jim. I was 55 years old when I decided that I wanted to get more into the world of publishing and writing. And it really was around reading recent research and then sharing it with people that followed me. And, you know, there's been a lot of transition in the last several years since I was 55. But basically the whole concept was I did not want to be obsolete or thought to be obsolete. So not only did I do the learning you're mentioning, but I put myself out there and said, I'm going to keep on trying to educate others to show them that I keep on filling the bucket and then emptying it and then filling it again. So, you know, one thing that's good about social media is you can share what you've learned, and that kind of forces you to learn more. The only best way to keep learning.
And the flip side is every single person can find a great mentor out there just from a few clicks on LinkedIn of somebody that wants that validation, that wants to share what they learned through their career to help the next generation up the ladder. So kudos to you.
Fantastic. Well, Jay, thanks for joining us on the show this week. I know you have a 40-page workbook for listeners, so you know, we can, if you forward that to us, we'll tweet it out or send it out so everyone can get a copy of that. But where can they find out more about Jay Samet and Disrupt You, the book?
You can find me anywhere on social media. I'm on all channels, easily accessible. And my website is my name, jaysamit.com. The book's in 8 languages, in Kindle and in audio, if you can put up with 9 hours of my voice.
Now, I will say, I will congratulate you on the fact that I went to Amazon to check this out, and you have 350 reviews on the book. That's phenomenal. How did you get that?
That's not to brag, that's just in North America.
Right, exactly.
Amazon Germany is different. People like it. It took a life of its own. For anybody thinking about writing a book, the greatest thing is in the 21st century, you hear from your readers, you get to engage with them, you get to hear their success stories. I get to hear some of the billion-dollar companies that have come out of that 90-day experiment, and it's just phenomenal. And the next language is Hawassa, if anybody knows that language, that it comes out in Nigeria. So I'm just humbled to do my part to pay it forward.
Well, congrats on your continued success, and thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you all.
All right, so up next is a guest all the way from Australia, and I'll let Chloe do the introduction because, Chloe, you know, you've known Rocky for quite some time. I know I have as well, but
I have.
Can you intro Rocky Scopoletti for us all?
Yeah, hopefully I do him justice. Really excited to welcome Rocky Scopoletti to Breaking Banks. I know Rocky back from his days at Telstra, where he was the head of financial services there years ago at one of the big the telecommunication companies in Australia, which is quite interesting because we're talking about that as a different industry that aligns with FS. Rocky has recently brought out YouthQuake 4.0. He's a great man. He's got a lot to say about the future and disrupting, and the youth of today has done a whole lot of work in demographics and millennials. So, Rocky, how are you?
Woo! Rocky!
Hi. Hi. Thank you so much, Chloe. I'm humbled by your introduction and great to be connected with you, Brett and Jim, as well. Hi.
Well, I mean, it's great to have you on the show. Why don't you just kick off by talking a little bit about YouthQuake 4.0 and
what is
what that
youthquake?
Means. Yeah.
Is it when youths fall into an earthquake? Or?
Yeah. So for the last 15 years, I've been really curious about the question of how do we increase our capacity to adapt to a world of accelerated change? And that is a question that does not have a definite answer. It is a question that is answered continuously through the course of time. Now, what's really interesting is that in the pursuit of that question, I've been really curious about the role that demographic change is playing into that question. And so millennials have been, you know, an integral part of the behavioral economics research that I've been doing for some 15 years now. And so, you know, back when I first started, the message I had to a lot of organizations that that I was advising was that, you know, here's a demographic that's coming. And really the message today is, well, guess what? They've arrived. And so YouthQuake is, in fact, the Oxford Dictionary's 2017 Word of the Year. And it's defined as a significant cultural, political, social, and economic change arising from the actions and influence of young people. Now, what's fascinating about the timing upon which, you know, Youthquake has been bestowed as the 2017 word of the year is that, in fact, its origins date back some 50 years ago, back, in fact, to the 60s, where the editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine first termed the word Youthquake to describe the significant cultural, political, economic and social change occurring throughout the 60s. And so its renaissance 5 decades later, I think, encapsulates exactly the disruption, the demographic disruption that's occurring around the world. And so so that's really what, you know, became the inspiration for the book. Now, when you think about then, you know, the environment that millennials around the world are now presented with, it's about the fourth industrial revolution. And so the second word...
Hence the 4.0.
Really sort of...
Yeah.
So the second word, I guess, in the book really relates to this environment. And what I struggled with, Brett, which I think many organisations are also struggling with, is this word transformation. Now, the reason why I say organisations struggle with it is because it's what I refer to as sort of somewhat delusional or fool's gold. You know, we hear organisations making announcements such as, you know, strategies around 2020 or 2025 or, you know, these futuristic sort of strategies, and then there's this, you know, major transformation. It sort of implies that when they get to 2020, that they've arrived. And, you know, there's
And that's it. That's the end of the journey. Nothing else is needed, right?
Yeah. And so this I found absolutely intriguing, because the reality is that there is no arrival. And so, you know, to me, it was about then sort of thinking through, well, we need to come back to perhaps thinking about a different philosophy here. And so, you know, when we think about sort of businesses, industries, corporations, they're going to continuously face Darwinian pressure. And so the philosophy of always in beta, constantly evolving, will become much more prevalent. In other words, it's not about an arrival, it's about adaption. And so the beautiful word, so I was then intrigued. I had to find another word. And so I came across this wonderful, beautiful old word called juvenescence. And juvenescence is defined, it's an old Latin word, it's defined as the constant state of youthfulness. And so the book, Youthquake 4.0, is really about these two words. It's about the significant cultural, economic, and political shift occurring with what's now the largest demographic group on the planet. And then the second part of the book is about juvenescence. It's about how do organizations adapt to a world of accelerated change.
Absolutely. So, Rocky, I am very interested. Sorry, Jim, did you have a question?
I was just saying, Rocky, you wrote an article for the Financial Brand a little while back around the Youthquake and juvenescence. And I'm wondering, you mentioned the fact that juvenescence really isn't just about the millennial generation. There's been a form of this throughout generations. And how are the millennials different than their parents from the way they're reacting to transformation right now?
So I think what's really fascinating about this demographic group is, in fact, their parents. Primarily baby boomers who grew up in, you know, throughout the 60s. And so it's unsurprising, therefore, where we see this generation, the children of really the first major social, economic and political change going on, that they are giving a renaissance or resurgence to to what's going on. How are they different? This is the first generation that has grown up with digital being as natural to them as the air that they breathe. And so we should be looking towards this demographic who has lived through a world of more change than any other generation before them. And so if we come to the question about how do we adapt, then human capital, you know, has to play a central role in answering that question. The difference, I think, here, Jim, is that, and the confronting element, is that this is a demographic who has very different views about the role of organisations, about key issues such as diversity, equality, sustainability.
I want to get into that, actually. No, I'm very, very interested in that because, you know, like that whole issue of inequality, diversity, things like that, we're seeing a real culture clash now, particularly here in the US, where you seem to have this very stark generational difference in terms of views around, you know, diversity, gender equality, you know, the LGBTQ movement and so forth. And climate change, as an example. So, you know, how different do you think, in terms of social awareness and these things, this, you know, youthful generation is? And, you know, how do you think they perceive their role in addressing those issues?
Well, I think, the way I've sort of explained it through the book, Brett, is to look at how they'll influence the world. And the first point is that we now need to recognise that they will increasingly exercise their demographic and democratic voice. And we're seeing this now play out in some of the really interesting election results around the world. So, for example, if we look at, you know, in the UK, for example, in the 2017 election, we saw the participation rate of millennials significantly increase and shape the swing against the May government. If we look into the US, into the midterm elections, you know, we can see that 70% of millennial women voted Democratic. And so we're starting to now really sort of see them exercise their democratic voice. Now, what I also talk about in the book is that, you know, if we're interested in the future of finance, if we're interested in, you know, the future of the wealth of nations, then guess what? This demographic are the future custodians of the world's wealth. And so how are they exercising their economic influence? And this is where, you know, you're starting to really see them turn away from brands that that are associated with values that they disagree with. And we saw this in the US.
Do you think that in respect to the youth, in terms of their social connectedness, do you think that the technology that they've grown up with, including social media and the sort of real-time ability to communicate, do you think that's created more of a global community sense rather than sort of the tribalism that we've seen in the past?
Yeah, absolutely, Brett. I think the underlying point here is that word community. And technology has enabled them to redefine, what we refer to as neighbourhoods. You know, in the past, when I was growing up, our neighbourhood was really defined by our access to the community, which pre-technology days was really defined geographically by the suburbs that I grew around, where I went to school, the sports that I was associated with. Community to millennials who have grown up and had the benefit of technology is really global. And so, you know, this is where I think, you know, we're now starting to see the first generation really exercise a global voice. And I think that's really important here is to sort of, you know, bring this sort of back to what does, you know, what does this really mean in terms of geographies? Well, 86% of the 2 billion millennials on the planet live in emerging markets. And something that you've talked about, Brett, very, very well in your book, Bank 4.0, is that the emerging markets are, in fact, where we're going to see the next wave of disruption. So we've got a lot of, you know, really exciting things to look forward to when it comes to innovation, entrepreneurship, that's going to come from this demographic in those emerging markets.
I think an interesting point there is on that community, and this just makes me think of something on the weekend. I was talking to my nieces about Facebook, actually, and everyone rolled their eyes. It was them and some friends, they're 15 and 13, and rolled their eyes and were like, we're not on Facebook, Chloe.
It's so passe. So,
yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how the communities change. And as you know, as global
but
as
they're on Insta. Becoming,
they're on Instagram. Well, everyone's on Instagram, but Rocky's on Instagram. We're pals on it. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the communities form and with this sort of globalization piece, or whether they do become closer together, or perhaps there is a segregation. And you're talking about these emerging markets, Rocky. What are you seeing out of the likes of, you know, of Latin America, or of, you know, some of the Asian nations?
Well, I mean, just let's just look at China. You know, I know it's a hot case study, but you know, in China, 400 million millennials. The scale of that is just unparalleled. Now, what's really interesting, which I sort of illustrate in the book, is if we look at the economics of that 400 million, the average economic capacity of a millennial in China has now reached parity with the average economic value of it across the population. So this is a demographic that has significant economic, influence. And you really see this now playing out with all of the messaging applications. You can see this, you know, as their affluence is rising through the middle class. You know, we can really sort of see this sort of coming together. Now, China is also a great example of looking at the community that groups like Alibaba have now sort of really formed around. And, you know, Jim, this is something that I talk to credit unions and mutuals a lot about, and that is that the genesis of your history and your purpose has been about community. But I'm not sure that they've really made the leap into translating community into a more contemporary definition, and attracting, you know, the millennials, which do think about community in completely new and different ways. And this is the big opportunity, I think, for that side of the market.
Okay, well, this, if you're interested in how the world is going to change with this new generation in the driving seat, then strongly recommend the book from Rocky. It's out available on Amazon and wherever good books are sold. It's called Youthquake 4.0, A Whole Generation and the Industrial Revolution. So any plans to be in New York for a book signing, Rocky?
Oh, look, I hope so, Brett. I hope so. And I think
we'll see if we can work on that for you, dude. And where can people find out more information about you, Rocky?
Absolutely. So you can visit my website, youthquake4.com.
Youthquake4.com. Fantastic. And how's the weather in Oz today?
It's because you're cold.
I know.
It's wonderful and sunny, actually, Brett. I'm looking at the beautiful beach that we have here in Cronulla, down in south of Sydney. So it's beautiful.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us again. That's Rocky Scopoletti. Hey, Jim, just before we wrap up, we've got about a minute left. Can you quickly give us a reminder on the meetup in London?
Yeah, we have a meetup in London on Valentine's Day. It's right after the Finibay conference. We'll be going right pretty much right from Finovate to the meetup. It's at Rise London, and it's at 6:30 p.m. on Valentine's Day, February 14th. That's next Thursday.
Okay, well, that's it. Thanks to our guests for this week, Jim Maroos, Jay Sammet, Disrupt Yourself. Check out that TEDx video that I talked about. Rocky Scopoletti, awesome to talk to, as always. Youthquake 4.0, something else to check out there. If you have anything that you'd like to say about today's show or future ideas, we always appreciate the feedback, questions, suggestions. Let us know. Twitter, we are at BreakingBanks1, or do email us at info@provokefm.com. If you'd like to sponsor a segment, drop us a line. Our sponsors make the show possible and you get to get some content into the show, which is always good. We say this every week, but if you do like this show, the best way you can support us is to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. You can check out the other podcasts. There's a dog barking. FinTech 5, Serial Entrepreneurs podcast, and of course, Breaking Banks Asia Pacific with Simon Spencer at provoke.fm. So with the future in mind, I'm going to leave you today with the wise words from Dr. Zeus that I may have stolen from Jay Sammet's TEDx talk. You have brains in your head and feet on your shoes. You can steer yourself any way that you choose. That's all from this week at Breaking Banks.
See you guys.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.